Hello and welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the most interesting stories trending on Hacker News. Today is October 4th, 2025, and this is episode number 174.
It's great to be here. We've got a fantastic lineup today. We'll be starting with a really insightful piece on how staff software engineers can actually influence company politics, not by scheming, but by being smart.
Then we'll dive into a classic hardware hacking story. A developer who bought a decommissioned Alibaba Cloud FPGA for just $200 and is trying to get it working.
After that, we'll be talking about a story from the EFF. It looks like the UK government is once again trying to force Apple to backdoor its encryption services. It's a story that just won't go away.
We also have a fascinating piece on how AI helped predict the mechanism of a new antibiotic, potentially saving years of research and millions of dollars.
And we'll wrap up with a language deep dive, comparing Ada and Rust by looking at solutions to the advent of code, which sparked a great debate in the comments.
A little something for everyone today. Let's get started. First up, we have a blog post titled, How I Influence Tech Company Politics as a Staff Software Engineer. The author argues against the common engineer mindset that company politics are an unbeatable game run by managers and executives.
Right. They say that trying to play Game of Thrones and scheme your way to influence is a terrible idea for an engineer. You'll just get outplayed. Instead, the author proposes a much more pragmatic approach. It's all about timing and alignment.
The core idea is that you should have a backlog of well-thought-out technical projects ready to go. These are your pet ideas. Things like refactoring the billing system, replacing an old build pipeline, or rewriting a slow service in a faster language.
Then you wait for what the author calls the appropriate wave. Companies go through phases where leadership suddenly cares a lot about one thing: reliability, developer experience, performance, you name it. When that wave hits, a VP is suddenly desperate for projects that align with that new mandate.
And that's your moment. You pitch your pre-prepared project as the perfect solution to their current problem. The beauty of this is that you're not spending your own political capital. You're leveraging the executive's much larger supply of it to get your important technical work done.
It's such a smart way to frame it. Instead of fighting the current, you're using it to get where you want to go. The author even quotes Milton Friedman, saying that when a crisis occurs, the actions taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. As a senior engineer, it's your job to make sure good ideas are lying around.
The Hacker News comments really dug into this. One user, GetNormality, summarized it nicely. Do what your manager wants and prepare for what they'll want in the future. It's about anticipating needs.
Another commenter, Auroronis, pointed out how critical that first part is for early career folks. They said many struggling junior engineers can turn things around with a simple loop. Ask your manager for the top priority, write it down, and then just do that one thing until it's done. So many people get distracted by side quests or more interesting tasks.
It sounds simple, but it's fundamental. Of course, not everyone was so optimistic. A user named Bradley's was skeptical, saying that preparing all these detailed project pitches takes a lot of spare time that many engineers don't have, especially on product teams where the only goal is making money, not improving velocity.
And then you have the really cynical take from Verispeed, who basically said, if you're not a shareholder, do the bare minimum. Keep your manager just happy enough not to fire you and use your time to upskill for a better job. That sentiment definitely exists out there.
It does, but I think the author's approach is the most effective middle ground. It's not about being a corporate drone, and it's not about being cynical and disengaged. It's about being strategic to achieve positive technical outcomes for both you and the company.
All right, our next story is pure classic Hacker News. It's titled Alibaba Cloud FPGA, the $200 Kintex Ultrascale.
I love these. The author is a hardware enthusiast who wants a powerful FPGA for some projects, but the official development boards are incredibly expensive, and the required software licenses can be eye-watering. So, what do? They go on eBay.
And they find a decommissioned Alibaba Cloud Accelerator card for just $200. This thing has a Kintex Ultrascale Plus, which is a very powerful chip, plus high-speed SFP Plus connectors and a PCIe interface. The catch? It comes with absolutely no documentation,
no guarantee it even works, and just a blurry photo hinting at a JTAG debug port.
It's the ultimate hardware mystery box. The blog post is a detailed chronicle of the author's attempt to reverse engineer it. First, just plugging it in to see if it shows any signs of life. Then, hunting for that JTAG port, trying to figure out the pinout, and ultimately trying to program the FPGA.
What makes it even more interesting is their commitment to using open-source tools. Instead of using Xilinx's proprietary and often expensive JTAG programmer, they're trying to get it working with a standard debugger and the open-source tool OpenOCD. It's a real challenge.
The comments section was full of other hardware hackers sharing tips. A user named Duskwoof pointed out that you can often use a cheap common adapter chip, the FT2232H, and flash it with special firmware to make it compatible with the official Xilinx tools, which is a great little hack.
That comment sparked a whole side discussion about FTDI chips. People brought up the infamous incident years ago when FTDI released a driver update through Windows that would intentionally brick counterfeit chips. This caused chaos because many people didn't even know they had a counterfeit chip in their device.
It's a fascinating piece of tech history. Another commenter, Jay Hallenworld, shared a great anecdote about using a Raspberry Pi 5 to bring up the PCIe interface on a different FPGA board. They said the Pi 5 is just fast enough to run modern desktop software, so they were able to give a live demo of their FPGA design over a Microsoft Teams call by just sharing their Pi's desktop.
That's amazing! It really shows how accessible this kind of advanced hardware development is becoming. This whole story is just a perfect example of the hacker spirit, taking a piece of discarded, undocumented hardware and, through sheer curiosity and technical skill, trying to bring it back to life.
Next up, we have a story from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF. The headline is, "The UK is still trying to backdoor encryption for Apple users." This is the latest chapter in a long-running saga.
It is. The UK's Investigatory Powers Act gives the government the power to issue something called a Technical Capability Notice, or TCN, to tech companies. They've used this to demand that Apple build a way for them to access encrypted iCloud backups.
The last time this happened, the order was global. Apple's response was to simply disable their advanced data protection feature, which is what enables end-to-end encryption for iCloud, for all users in the UK. They chose to remove the feature rather than compromise its security.
Then it seemed like the UK government backed down, but according to this new report, they didn't really. They just rewrote the order to specifically target only British users' data. The EFF argues, correctly in my opinion, that this doesn't make it any better. A backdoor is a backdoor.
Exactly. Once you built that capability, it creates a vulnerability that could be exploited by anyone, not just the good guys. It also sets a dangerous precedent for other governments around the world to demand the same thing.
The comments on Hacker News were, as you'd expect, strongly in favor of encryption. One user, Pessimizer, made a really interesting political point. They asked, who is actually asking for this? They argue that there's no real democratic demand for these policies from the public. It's being pushed by a small, influential group within the intelligence and law enforcement communities.
That's a great question. Another commenter, Alkasin Mosk, connected this to other UK laws, like RIPA, which can force individuals to hand over their passwords to the police or face jail time. They lamented that the average person doesn't understand how crucial privacy is for a functioning democracy.
There was also a pragmatic, if cynical, discussion about Apple's motivations. Commenters pointed out that Apple complied with surveillance demands in China because it's a massive, strategically vital market they can't afford to lose. The UK is a smaller market, but if Apple gives in here, what's to stop France, Germany, or Australia from demanding the same?
It's a very slippery slope. Apple is in a tough position, but so far, outside of China, they've held a relatively firm line on encryption. We'll have to see if they continue to refuse this revised order from the UK.
Our next story is about a really exciting intersection of AI and medical research. The headline is, "New antibiotic targets IBD, and AI predicted how it would work." Unfortunately, the link to the university's press release was broken, but thankfully, the Hacker News submitter, KLK2019, posted the key details in the comments.
And the details are fascinating. Researchers at McMaster University discovered a new antibiotic,
called interalolin, which seems to be effective against bacteria linked to inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD. But discovering a new potential drug is only the first step. A huge, expensive part of the process is figuring out its mechanism of action, or MOA. Basically, how it actually works at a molecular level.
This is where the AI comes in. The researchers collaborated with a lab at MIT that developed an AI model called DiffDoc. They fed the structure of their new antibiotic into the model, and in just 100 seconds, it predicted that the drug works by attacking a specific protein complex in the bacteria called LOL-CDE.
That's incredible speed. The article notes that a traditional MOA study can take up to 2 years and cost around $2 million. Using this AI tool, the team was able to validate the mechanism in just 6 months for about $60,000. That is a massive reduction in both time and cost.
It's a perfect example of AI not just replacing human work, but augmenting it and dramatically accelerating the pace of scientific discovery. One commenter, Zap the Impaler, remarked on how cool it must be to work at a big research university where you can just walk across campus and collaborate with world-class experts in a completely different field like this.
However, there was a great skeptical comment from a user named Following the Dow. They pointed out that the target protein, LOL-CDE, has been known as a vulnerability in E. coli for years, and inhibitors for it have been known since the 1970s. They asked, is AI smart, or are scientists just getting dumber?
That's a sharp critique, but it led to a good follow-up discussion. Another user, Decoder, replied that there are probably tens of thousands of papers published on related topics. It's humanly impossible for any one scientist to have read and connected all of them. This is where AI shines, not necessarily in having a novel idea, but in its ability to rapidly search and find connections within a vast ocean of existing human knowledge.
Exactly. The AI isn't replacing the scientist's intuition or expertise. It's acting as an unbelievably powerful research assistant, pointing them in the right direction and saving them from months or years of painstaking lab work.
And for our last story today, we have a classic programming language comparison. The post is a link to a GitHub document titled A Comparison of Ada and Rust Using Solutions to the Advent of Code.
This is great. Ada and Rust are two languages that are often mentioned in the same breath when it comes to safety and correctness, but they come from completely different eras. Ada has its roots in the late 70s and is heavily used in defense, aviation, and other safety-critical systems. Rust is the modern contender, famous for its borrow checker and memory safety guarantees without a garbage collector.
The author used the advent of code, a series of daily programming puzzles, as a practical basis for comparing them. While we can't go through the whole document, the comments on Hacker News immediately zeroed in on one of Ada's classic features, ranged types.
Right. In Ada, you can declare a number type that is restricted to a specific range. For example, an integer that can only hold values from 0 to 200. If you try to assign a value outside that range, the program will raise an error. A commenter named Paul Keeble lamented that this great idea never really caught on in the mainstream.
This kicked off a fantastic debate. A user named Wuck13, who works in aviation, pointed out that these subranges can be problematic for high assurance certification. They insert runtime checks that can be difficult to trace back to a specific line of source code, which complicates the rigorous verification processes required in that industry.
Then another user, Prerock, raised a more common concern. What if a programmer makes a bad assumption? Say you define a person's age as a range from 0 to 110. The first time your program encounters someone who is 111, it crashes. Is that really better?
And this is where the counterargument, which I think is the stronger one, came in. User WilsonB3 replied that yes, it is absolutely better. It's better for the program to crash immediately and obviously at the exact point where the programmer's assumption was violated. The alternative is that the program continues in some undefined state with a corrupted value, only to crash much later in a completely unrelated part of the code, making the bug incredibly difficult to track down.
It's the fail-fast philosophy. This whole thread was a perfect microcosm of programming language design. It's all about trade-offs between compile time safety, runtime safety, performance, and developer convenience. There's rarely a single right answer, and seeing these different perspectives laid out so clearly was really illuminating.
And that's all the time we have for today. We covered a lot of ground, from strategic engineering and big tech to the thrill of hardware hacking, the endless fight for encryption, and the power of AI in scientific research.
And we finished with a great, nuanced discussion on programming language design. It's a good reminder that the tools we build with have deep philosophical differences baked right into them.
Thanks for tuning in to HN Pod. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News.